The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. David, you have talked about legacy, stewardship, leaving the right foundation for the next generation. And yet we're watching in Washington right now, and they just continue to kick the can down the road.
Well, not only in Washington, but I think popularly we are focused on the here and now so much that thinking intergenerationally is very foreign to us anymore. So to be able to think intergenerationally and to see the weight of your decisions today weighed in the light of history, the future history, if you will,
right,
is very important. And I think that notion of stewardship, of looking forward, of putting the next generation in a better position, is something that our guest today has focused on for many years. David Walker was Controller General of the United States, head of the Government Accountability Office from 1998 to 2008. Is appointed by President Bill Clinton. And, you know, it's very interesting when you look at it. If you looked at sort of an accounting background,
right,
the best CV you can possibly imagine, prior to his appointment at the GAO, he was a partner, managing director for Arthur Andersen. He worked as the public trustee for Social Security and Medicare from 1990 to 95, and then as assistant, or prior to that, assistant secretary of labor for pension and welfare benefit programs during the Reagan administration. Spent time with Arthur Andersen, as I mentioned, Cooper's Librand. I mean, again, kind of a who's who in the world of accounting.
Well, and what's nice about the who's who in the world of accounting, especially when we're talking about politics, is this is very bipartisan. If you look, you've got Reagan represented, you've got Bush, Clinton, the next Bush represented. He seems to have a constancy in Washington. But the thing is, what he's saying, they don't like to hear. It's amazing that he's been able to keep his job as long as he did.
He spent quite a bit of time with the Peterson Foundation, Pete Peterson's group, and they put together an amazing film a number of years ago, IOUSA. If people haven't watched it, they must. A great documentary, just looking at fiscally where we're at, where we're going, how we got here, and some of the practical things that need to be done.
Well, David, with stewardship, you can have the best intentions you want, but you have to check the math. You have to know the math, and this is a man who knows the math.
David Walker, stewardship, you know, putting the next generation in a better position is something that we should all be focused on. And quite the opposite appears to be happening today. It's young people that have quite a bit at stake as we look at sort of what we're leaving as a fiscal legacy. Let's just briefly review kind of where we've been, where we're going. You're a CPA. You ran the Government Accountability Office for many years. And before that, we're intimately acquainted with Social Security. I mean, by analogy, we could describe you as a doctor of numbers, of balance sheets. That would be the focus of your practice. In a nutshell, why don't you diagnose for us and prescribe the way forward from a policy-oriented perspective and for we the people, what we individually could strive for?
Well, the federal government's grown too big, promised too much, and needs to fundamentally restructure. 100 years ago, the government was only about 2% of the U.S. economy, meaning the federal government. Last year, it was 23%. 100 years ago, the Congress controlled 97% of spending. Last year, it controlled 34% of spending and going down. Most people know about our national debt clock. 10 years ago, it was $5.6 trillion. Now, it's about $16.6 trillion. But that lowballs our problem because the national debt clock doesn't count unfunded civilian and military pensions, retiree health care. It doesn't count unfunded Social Security and Medicare promises, a range of other commitments and contingencies that in total are over $71 trillion, over $500,000 per household, increasing by about $8.2 million a minute, $350 billion a month that people in Washington continue to do nothing. And that $71 trillion is up from only about $20 in 2000. So, you know, Washington has become out of touch and out of control, and we're going to have to address our structural deficits, but to do it in a way that doesn't undercut the tenuous economic recovery, that doesn't exacerbate our unemployment and underemployment problems, that doesn't shred the social safety net. And so what has to happen is to come up with a comprehensive grand bargain that will recapture control of the budget, reform social insurance programs, rationalize our health care promises and control related costs, reduce defense and other non-discretionary spending in an intelligent fashion without compromising national security, and engaging in comprehensive tax reform that will make it simpler fair and generate more revenues. And for that to happen, quite frankly, we the people have to start putting a lot more pressure on elected officials to start making tough choices in order to create a better future. And if they fail to do so, we ought to throw them out. And I don't care what their party affiliation is. And we also need to put more pressure on the president to lead, because the president has not been leading. He's already almost 6 weeks late on presenting his budget, not expected to come until after it's 2 months late. That's just not acceptable given our current financial condition and our projected fiscal outlook.
You know, recently you said that it's time for more leadership rather than continued laggardship, and in reference to the political dysfunction and the partisanship in Washington. At the heart of our financial crisis is a political crisis, and we wonder what it will take for ideological differences to be set aside and a sustainable course to be set. Is it we the people putting that pressure, or is there something else?
Well, there's no question that the more pressure that we the people put on our elected officials, the quicker we're going to get action, because Washington has become a lag indicator. It tends not to make tough choices until there's a crisis that gives it cover to act. But it's incredibly important that we not have a debt crisis in the U.S., because if we do, it'll be a global depression, and nobody will be able to hide. We can't avoid that, but the clock is ticking. Time's not working in our favor. These deals don't get done in even-numbered years because they're election years. So we need to really try to make something happen this year. Now, frankly, we now have a republic, which, as you know, is a representative democracy, that is not representative of or responsive to the public. So we're going to need political reforms. We're going to need redistricting reform to make the districts more competitive and to not entrench incumbents. We're going to need to have integrated and open primaries rather than having the Democratic and Republican parties have a stranglehold on who has access to the ballot and having the wing nuts decide a vast majority of who our elected representatives are, meaning the far right or the far left. We're going to need campaign finance reform, and frankly, we're going to need term limits. And some of those things can be done at the state level, like the first two, and California and other states have already done it, and some are going to take constitutional amendments. But we've got to have a game plan, we've got to execute on it, and it's going to take all of us working together and make it happen.
You mentioned that government's grown significantly, quintupled, over quintupled over the last 100 years. Your group, the Comeback America Initiative, ranks the U.S. behind Spain, Italy, and Portugal in terms of fiscal sustainability. You know, is this something that you think must happen, these reforms, in 2013? Even numbered, you said nothing happens. Really, 2013 is a now or never moment, is it not?
Well, we really need to do everything that we can to maximize the chance that it will happen in 2013, because it won't happen in 2014. And quite frankly, President Obama is probably going to enter lame duck status in 2015, and people are going to be focused on the next presidential election. We may be able to wait till 2015, but again, I'm not sure that the political stars will be aligned then. So we need to do everything we can to try to make it happen this year. We don't want to risk having a debt crisis here.
So the debt crisis, really specific, there's some issues here. You've mentioned Medicare, Social Security, defense. Those are three big budget items. A fourth would be the interest component. This is something that today at $224 billion is big, but we're looking at historically low financing rates. And it doesn't take much in terms of creditor concerns for U.S. to see that interest component click up to $500 billion. What are we looking at in terms of a reasonable prognosis for further downgrades 2013, 2014 by an S&P, a Fitch, an Egan Jones, and Moody's?
We have huge interest rate risk in the United States. We have the lowest interest rates in history. We're self-dealing in our own debt. The Federal Reserve is the only player that has an appetite for our long-term debt. We don't really know what risk-free interest rates are. What we do know is that both our fiscal policy, which is tax and spending, and monetary policy, which is money supply, are unsustainable over time. It's not a matter of if interest rates are going to go up. It's a matter of when and how much. For every 1% or 100 basis point increase in interest rates, it's another $165 billion in interest, for which we'll get nothing. The most recent CBO projection is that in 10 years, we're going to be paying over $800 billion a year in interest, for which we will get nothing. And so while healthcare costs represent the fastest growing program expense, the fastest growing expense is interest. And that's paying for past excess consumption and will serve to just further complicate our challenges if we don't defuse this ticking debt bomb.
this circles back around to the issue of stewardship and the notion that if we don't do anything, we are leaving future generations with bankruptcy, essentially, you know, insolvency. And it is just a matter of time before our creditors figure out that we don't have our house in order. I mean, by their actions, what message is the president and Congress sending to our creditors? Obviously, political stalemate isn't reassuring. What's being communicated?
Well, what's being communicated is that our politicians think that we're immune from the laws of prudent finance, and we're not. You can't spend $1 trillion more than you take in, charge it to the credit card, and self-deal in your own debt and not expect to have a day of reckoning. You know, frankly, I've traveled all over the world. I've been to about 100 countries, all 50 states. I have, when I was Comptroller General of the United States, I was head of strategic planning for auditor generals around the world. I was chairman of the audit committee for the United Nations. So I have a lot of contacts around the world. And frankly, when I talk to them, they say, what are you people doing? I mean, what's wrong with your political system? Don't they understand that if you don't put your finances in order, they will have all kinds of problems and everyone else will suffer over time? Well, I understand that. You understand that. Most of your readers understand that. The question is to make sure that we, the people, make sure our elected representatives understand that. And if they don't start doing their job and earning their pay, kick them out.
It's been suggested that growth is probably the best way out. A company comes under pressure, and oftentimes you can grow your way out of a difficult circumstance. Some years ago, you suggested that either long-term double-digit growth rate, radical spending cuts, or a radical increase in revenue could balance U.S. finances. Maybe you could refresh us as to just how radical any of these alternatives would need to be to bring us back to fiscal sustainability and financial freedom.
Well, we clearly want to increase economic growth. Right now, we have weak economic growth, and to the extent that we can increase economic growth, then that'll grow the pie, that'll enhance revenues, that'll create new job opportunities, and it will help us to get debt as a percentage of the economy down to a reasonable and sustainable level quicker. And that's what our goal ought to be. Forget about paying off the debt. It's never going to happen. You don't need to have a balanced budget, plus the way the government ends up calculating a balanced budget is a bad joke anyway. But what we do need to do is that we need to get our public debt as a percentage of the economy down to a reasonable, sustainable level within the next 10 to 12 years. That's what our goal is. You know, there's a new four-letter word in Washington. It's called math. You need to have a plan that's based upon reasonable and sustainable assumptions and that the math works. You can't grow your way out of a $71-plus trillion hole, which I referred to before. It would take double-digit real GDP growth for decades. It's never happened. It's not going to happen. So, yes, we want additional economic growth, but we're going to have to make tough choices on budget controls, on defense and other spending. We're going to have to reform social insurance programs, who's eligible for what, when, and what subsidy. We're going to have to reform our tax system and generate more revenues. And my view is it's about 2-to-1 spending reductions to additional revenues. And the longer we wait, the more we're going to have to do, the greater the risk of a crisis, and the more disruption.
You suggested that we do have time to get our house in order, in part because of the size of our economy, in part because the dollar represents 60% of global reserve assets. However, that latter number slips. It has slipped the last couple of years, and as rumblings of discontent with the dollar and the euro get louder, how much time do you think we really have?
Only God knows, and God's not telling us. What I know is this, is that we're clearly on an imprudent and unsustainable path. I don't think the U.S. dollar is going to lose its reserve currency status, but we're going to continue to lose market share if we don't put our finances in order. We've got more time. We don't have unlimited time. It's time to get to work.
If there was one or two things that you would encourage our listeners to do, get off the dime and do something, not just listen, not just be informed, not even just have a dinner conversation about what we are talking about today, what are some action points?
Well, first, I think people need to educate themselves at keepingamericagreat.org. In addition to that, I would encourage them to go to nodealnobreak.net. That's a new online campaign to try to help get Congress to spend more time in Washington until we end up getting a grand fiscal bargain. You know, believe it or not, Congress takes off a week for every federal holiday. They've got a 2-week spring break coming up. I've never had a spring break in my life. And they get off August. Now, it doesn't mean they don't do anything, but they're sure not working to solve this problem when they're out of Washington. It's time that they spend more time in Washington. It's time that they start generating some results. Quit going from short-term crisis to short-term crisis. Quit treating the symptoms rather than the disease. We've got to reform social insurance programs. We need comprehensive tax reform, and we need it in 2013.
David Walker, thank you for joining us. KeepingAmericaGreat.org, NoDealNoBreak.net. Let's spend some time looking those over and get to work.
Thank you very much.
Well, unfortunately, David Walker uses the four-letter word that Washington hates to hear. He uses the word M-A-T-H, math.
It has to add up. It must add up. And I mean, this is the problem. The government today keeps three sets of books. That's typically a practice by someone who wants to hide something.
Right.
And we've got to get past that. Moving towards transparency, step number one. Moving towards a budget that is sustainable, step number two. And it would be time well spent, as David Walker suggested, spending some time, keepingamericagreat.org, nodealnobreak.net. That nodealnobreak.net is great because what we're basically asking, and what he's asking in this initiative, is you don't get to take time off until you've done your job. Vacation is not there. You must do work before play. And we're all on hold as a country. We're waiting for the outcomes of whether it's the sequester or a grand bargain. We're waiting. And you're doing what? I mean, this is the equivalent of fiddling while Rome burns. Where were you when all of this went down? Oh, I was taking my spring break. Oh, I was on my summer vacation.
Yeah, that's when Jay Leno said President Obama wants Congress to increase the minimum wage. Believe me, when it comes to doing minimum for their wage, Congress knows what they're talking about.
You know, this really does boil down to what David was suggesting. We have to be involved. We have to be interested. We, the people, have to make more of a difference than we have over the last several decades, where we've essentially delegated the responsibility of governance to a quote-unquote professional class. And that can't be the case moving forward. We know what the results look like when that is the case.
Well, and David, we know the audience listening to this program is an audience that likes to educate themselves. And so he said, go to keepingamericagreat.org. That education is so important because, frankly, you have to know the math so they can't fool you with theirs. Well, you've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney and our guest today, David Walker. You can find us at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Or give us a call at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.